Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Where are you going to be on June 16th?
What? Hey, Pat, stop flirting. Hey, y'all. Whitney Cummings here. First and foremost, I'm back on the road. Back on the road. New material. New me. Kind of. I went to a couple therapy sessions. I'm like, new me. June 16th, I'll be in Detroit, Michigan at the Motor City Casino Hotel. June 17th, I'll be in Cincinnati, Ohio at the Hard Rock Casino. It's going to be so much harder. When I walk in, the party doesn't start until I walk in. The hard doesn't start till I walk in. Did I just become Theo Von? June 23rd to 25th, I'm going to be at the Brea, California, Brea Improv, working out new material. This is actually the one we're going to shoot. I'm figuring out my next special. So come to Brea. Help me figure out what I should keep in, what I should not keep in. Don't worry, I won't do crowd work videos. Don't worry, I won't suck you guys into my rigmarole, peddling my wares. I love the idea that now with crowd work videos, someone's just like in the front row, like coming to see a show. And someone's like, hey, what's up with your wife? Because she's fat. And it's like 90 million views. They're like, you guys should never sit in the front row. Comedians are monsters. We're basically doing to the audience now what Will Smith did to Chris Rock. August 11th, I'm going to be in Lake Charles. Is that Louisiana?
Louisiana.
I'm going to be in Louisiana at the Grand Event Center. August 26th, I'll be at Rancho Mirage. Don't bring up that word ever. The Rancho Mirage in... it's in Rancho Mirage, California, the ballroom. Oh, yeah, at Agua Caliente. This is basically Palm Springs, guys. Mm-hmm. This is why I'm getting confused. My dyslexia just got me, and it got me good. On October 8th, I'm going to be somewhere. I'm going to be in Waterville, Maine. That's right, at the Waterville Opera House. So, guys, I am starting my opera career, and I am I am singing opera at this. I'm not doing comedy.
You should do an only opera house tour.
I'm doing opera, which might be funnier than stand up at this point. October 27th, I'm going to be in Miami, Florida. Well, kind of Miami, Florida adjacent. I'm going to be on the Fully Loaded cruise with the great Bert Kreischer. If he survives this press tour, I don't know, man. He looks tired. He's been through it, but you guys should see the machine. It's fucking hell. Oh shit, I can't curse. Also, the reason that I've aged 600 years, the OnlyFans roast, they're out. If you're confused, I can't help you. Make a wish. It's free on OnlyFans TV. People are like, what's OnlyFans TV? But you know what Roku is? Really? People are like, what's OnlyFans TV? I just saw the show on Roku. You figured that out. Remember when you got Quibi? And you just, what's the confusion? OnlyFans is a website. You've heard of it. Just do of.tv.
Anywhere there's a search bar, just type it in.
Anywhere there's a search bar. Yeah, I'm gonna, there's this new thing on Tubi. How did you get that so quickly in your brain? It's easier for you to wrap your head around Tubi and Voodoo, V-U-D-U, and... There's another one. What is it?
Boo Boo?
Boop Bop. It's on the Bop 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 streaming network. So of.tv/Whitney/roast. of.tv/Whitney-.
OFTV.
Okay, now I get why you guys are confused.
of.tv/Whitney's leggings.
Whitney. Dash. There's a difference between a slash and a... It's OnlyFans. We should probably call it a gash. So of.tv/Bert-.
I think it's a forward
roast.
Forward slash. I'm going to look it
no,
up.
No,
right
I think
now.
It's a backslash.
Let's see. OF.
Forward slash. Are you, TV. Are you about to bring up an accent of goo?
It's forward slash.
Forward slash. What did I say? Backslash?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's of.tv/Whitney-Cummings-presents.
Oh, that's both of them. Well, that's got I didn't all even know that.
You
now I'm
own,
confused.
Like, it's like your own series.
Oh, got it. It's, or Google Whitney Cummings roast. Google Burt Kreischer roast. It'll come right up there, sweet pea. I don't know what to tell you. Someone's in my house. I gotta go.
Action.
Oh, thank you. My God. There is a man in LA. I was telling me after you, like, I'm so toxic. I'm like, I need to hear action. Like a man.
Yeah.
Like
yeah,
I'm
yeah.
a show pony. I need like that gun to go off. Thank you, yeah. Pat. Jenna Friedman is here. Easily my favorite person.
Where do I look? Oh my God. So many cameras. Which one?
So many cameras. You're not, the they're all on me. Don't worry.
The one on the right is yours.
You're not on camera for this. You can just chill. You're audio only. What was it? Was it Police Academy where there was a guy that was so tall that he was out of frame?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, is that
Hightower?
Right.
Was it Hightower? Yeah.
Well, because there's a scene I remember where sometimes someone was like, you have something in your teeth, and he reached and just like a banana fell out of frame. It's like so stupid. Jenna's made one of my favorite shows, Indefensible, on Amazon.
It's no longer.
No longer. I mean, it's still on. Two seasons are on Amazon.
Season 1A and 1B. That's what they called it. So
Amazon?
That they won't have to pay me for two seasons.
So here's
it's on AMC Plus, and you can buy them on Amazon.
So I'm just going to say something to you right now, Amazon. Jenna, feel free to stay out of this. This is my fight. Amazon, I know you're making television shows, but to be clear, you're a grocery store. You can't treat us like this. You also just took Saudi money. Hmm. You're a grocery store that took Saudi money. How dare you continually humiliate, denigrate, and undervalue all my incredibly talented friends? I got put through a nightmare at Amazon trying to make a pilot for a grocery store. Users who watch this show also bought Kotex Plus. It's your grocery store. Is there no humility?
Yeah, it was, I would say AMC Plus, Sundance Channel were really, Amazon just kind of came in. And put it on.
I see.
Yeah.
They're the bargain bin.
Yeah.
Amazon's like when you're leaving Walmart.
Don't hate the player, hate the game.
Sure.
For this one scenario, but Amazon is also.
Oh, because they didn't produce mm-hmm. it. Okay.
Yeah.
See, I told you it was my fight. Mm-hmm. I told you it was personal. Mm-hmm. Had nothing to do with your shining career. My failures at making television for grocery stores should have nothing to do with your successes at making television at actual legitimate artist colonies like Sundance Channel. Saw Focus on Adult Swim. Okay, so I'm just going to do like joke lab. Let's just do joke lab for a second.
Sure.
Do you think men's general frustration with women could have any connection to gendering cars and boats as female? Like, there's a little bit, like, there's like a, it's interesting to me in society when things are she and when they're he. Like,
they want, like,
Siri is she. The lady that gives us directions on GPS, always is she. And we hate the person delivering, you know?
I mean, other, like in Spanish, they actually gender like words, like the tables of woman, la mesa. That's,
who decides that?
I don't know. It's just la mesa.
What's
El agua, water's man. El libro, a book is a man.
Yeah. So women can't be out there books. Getting literate.
Yeah.
But like it's because I am obsessed with the idea that it's like cars and boats are always female and they're expensive to maintain and lose their value almost immediately when you get them.
Right.
And they're hard, you know, like they take a lot of work, a
lot
of maintenance.
I think that line can work.
I'm joking, but I'm also serious. I always start in a serious place of like when we gender things, like, and it's why don't we call cars and boats he?
Well, because.
It just is gay to
no,
sit on
I mean,
a he.
If I could afford a yacht, I would call it he, Mr. Yacht. You know, but I can't afford it yet.
Yeah, it's just like, it's like, I'm just
maybe
trying to
maybe it comes
kind
down
of,
to that. It's like if you can afford a yacht, you're going to want to fuck your yacht. You know what I mean? Yeah, and you're most likely a man who's going to want like a female yacht.
It's something that you're most buying likely for your pleasure to show off. It's a trophy.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, it's something you have to maintain and caretake.
Yeah.
But I do feel like little things like that make a big difference.
Well, they're like, yeah, like a billionaire, typically male.
Mm-hmm.
Everything you own, you want to fuck.
There's something interesting about how I feel like guys are not attracted to women that earn their own money. Like a female billionaire. But if she's inherited it, that's okay.
Well, because it's different personality
types. If it's self-made, like...
Ugh. Well, what it takes to be a... Who's a female self-made billionaire? Sheryl Sandberg?
Spanx.
Oh, the Kardashians.
The Spanx lady. Yeah. Kardashian, self-made, yes. I mean, I think that... I mean, their dad was a big lawyer. Right. OJ's lawyer.
Sheryl Sandberg.
The away luggage, you know, like there's kind of, yeah, that billion, not, I don't know, billion, I don't think I even understand the concept of billion.
Yeah.
The Harry Potter lady.
J.K. Rowling.
You know, those kind of
yeah,
people.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I mean, yeah, and versus like someone who inherits it.
It's like, oh, poor thing, she was stuck in this castle and she has all this money.
Or like, it's just a different personality type. Like I picture like, you know, like Meg Whitman or something. Like, you know yeah what I mean? Like, I don't know why I said that, but. It's just a different.
I also had this thing that I'm trying to kind of like, you know, do you ever have really funny, interesting things happen to you? And you're like, but I don't tell stories on stage. Like, you don't really tell stories.
I don't tell stories. I can't tell this one. Yes, to answer your question.
Well, there's this thing that happened. Tell me this is funny. Where I can't get out of my head and I don't know why. And I think maybe I'm just a little bit maybe it's because everyone's now so gendery, pronoun-y.
It's yeah, like, that's a lot. There's a lot going on.
Because I'm doing this, the new hour I'm working on is about the
it's hard to get
trans
in a,
stuff,
like a
drag
flow
stuff.
State when you're trying to self-censor. It's hard to get in like a flow state as a comedian.
Yeah, well, there's also just something of like, it's like, you know, call me by my pronoun, this, I'm a she, I identify as she, her, like cars identify as she, yachts, she. I'm just like kind of in a,
yeah,
trying to get all the, to make a case. I'm trying to, you get a bunch of data and then figure out what my case is going to be. You know,
yeah,
this is why we, you know.
Yeah.
One time I was walking to get coffee in a Burbank, whatever, like mini mall. There's a Jamba Juice and then there's the coffee place and mm-hmm. then like a Panda Express, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
There's a table full of three guys that are just sitting. And you know when like you walk up to like when you're walking past three guys, they're like young. They're like 25, 26. They're there for the day to talk and look at mm-hmm. girls and, you know. And you know when you walk past guys, you know they're going to look at you. You mm-hmm. know it's kind of like you don't want them to want you, but you're also going to kind of – it's just this weird thing where you're yeah. like, I'm going to pretend I don't see you looking at me, but I'm also going to kind of try to look cute and reject you.
I maybe remember feeling that way. I've had – like since I had a baby, I feel like – I'm
but it's
not,
just that
like
thing in the back of your head.
I don't identify as like a sexual, like a sex object.
But it's this weird thing where you're like, why am I trying to impress these guys? Like, I don't want to date them. They're not, nothing's going to happen here.
Yeah.
But I know that I'm on display.
Right.
It's just like that thing where you they'll know they're looking at you.
That you're on display.
And there's times you want to just be like, I'm just going to boycott and be like, the fee, fi, fo, fum. Like,
yeah.
Just, or
yeah.
something. Or just like, like.
That would make them want you more.
But it's just this weird yeah. thing where you're like, what is this? It's just like a knowing guys are looking at you and
yes.
I want them to look, but I don't, whatever.
Right.
And so I'm walking by and then I kind of look over to like see if they're looking kind of, which mm-hmm. is so pathetic.
You let them in. You give them eye contact.
Well, just to kind of be like.
You ask for it.
Yeah. You're never going to have this Jamba Juice loiterers. Like.
Yeah.
And I look over and the like head guy, you can tell he's like the, you know, Lord of the Flies, like head dude.
Yeah.
He just looks at me and he goes, what's up, dude? And I like.
Did they recognize you? Maybe they know who you are.
Don't think. This is a while ago.
Okay.
I think about it a couple times a week.
You think about being caught. How old were you?
30. Maybe 30.
You just wanted to be catcalled and you were called a dude.
It just was, what's up, dude?
And that's upsetting because
it was just.
It wasn't
I thought it was funny. I just thought it was such a funny, disarming thing to way to flirt.
Way to flirt.
And it was just, it was almost like he was like, don't worry, we're friends. What's up, dude? like, it just threw me in a way that I still think about it.
Were the guys younger? Because maybe that's like a younger generation way to catcall.
If he had said, like what's being... up, sweetie? I would have been like, okay. Yeah. Kept moving, never would have thought about it again.
Yeah. But he said...
I don't know. There was just something
There was like an egalitarian catcall.
Like, it was almost like...
It was like gender is a construct.
Don't worry. We're not going to follow you to your car, bro.
Oh.
Or something. Like, it was just, I just thought it was so funny. And just so bizarre. And then I can't stop thinking about it. Like, I think about that moment a lot. Do you ever have moments in your life where you're like, I just want to go back and find that person and be like, what was that?
Oh my God, I'm so tired because I just didn't sleep last night. So it's like really hitting me right now. But
sorry. Sorry. I'm all over the place, but
no, you're fine.
I'm not against catcalls totally. You know what I mean?
It's I'm not against them totally.
Yeah, it's
catcalls. It's our generation too.
That's a whole other thing. I mean, in my first special, I did a joke about like I think there's something sweet about it sometimes. You know, when you go to like Italy, it's just like it's all they do.
Yeah.
It's but you know, I remember there was a moment I was walking by a construction zone in New York. This was, they were doing, because I remember because it was they were building the Whitney. And I remember being like, me. And I walked by. I mean, it was literally hundreds of construction workers. And I remember walking by, and this was 3 years ago, like at the height of, you know, Me Too stuff. Not a whistle, not nothing. Mm. And I remember being like, ooh, I kind of miss it.
I was in New York a couple weeks ago. And some guy, I had on like gardening shoes that definitely had like breast milk on them. And some guy was like, I can like nice feet. I can tell. And it's normally the creepiest comment, but I was just like,
I needed to hear that.
I did, because I just feel I'm like a zombie.
You know what I hate? When you go on a show or something and someone's like, that show you did is really underrated.
Oh yeah.
I think that show is everyone I know loves it. Everyone I know talks
about
it. Yeah.
It was my dream show, and I wish we could do more. That one, I think, ended partly because of the pandemic. Mm-hmm. We were about to shoot the third special. And then also there was a lot of internal stuff at Adult Swim, and the people that brought in the show left. And then also, I mean, Adult Swim in general.
Yeah. I mean, it's all of these networks, they come and they go.
Everything is kind of fucked. That's, you know, why we're striking.
Right. Writers not getting paid, obviously. Yeah. But it's this thing where people come up to me like, why did your show get canceled? And you're like, it's a business, and these two businesses merged, and the person that ran it lost their job, whatever. But
what we need is, at the top, we need AI actually running the business.
Well, my robot's available.
Yes, to run. We need Bearclaw to run Sony.
And so Jenna's toured with me. My favorite writer of jokes is Jenna Friedman. Came on the road with me a couple times, lucky enough. How was your experience on the road with me, by the way? I feel like you were slightly terrified.
It was great. Okay. I don't know if we'll put I write about it in the book.
No way.
Mm-hmm. I write about it because I didn't realize, so I had never gone on tour with a headlining female comic in my entire career.
Why do you think that is?
Because there weren't that many, at mm-hmm. least when I was coming up. It costs money to take people on tour with you. Mm-hmm. I mean, I had toured with other women, but not on the same level. Like, as kind of like, my first time overseas was with Jessica Delfino. Mm-hmm. But it was like a different dynamic. It was like, not like, you had like an actual production. You know what I mean? And it was just kind of the two of us staying in Walthamstow with her friend who used to be a sex worker.
Sure.
And not really making money.
Sure.
But you actually have like an apparatus behind your touring. And I also, it's more.
I do?
Yeah, you have a whole team. And it was really, I write about it. It was cool. It was cool to see that. And I had never toured with a headlining male comic. And that's kind of like the chapter is a little bit about that. Like how that kind of works when you're coming up. When we were coming up, you know, I don't know if you had male comics take you under your wing.
Mm-hmm.
So who was like the first comic?
They took me under their undercarriage.
Right. But so, the thing is, it's like, I don't want to like name names, but like a touring guy comic probably, at least when we were coming up, wouldn't normally take a younger
Gallagher
woman. Yeah. Gallagher.
Name them.
No, but they wouldn't take a female comic on tour because of like people would think they're fucking.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
They would be fucking. Or the girlfriend of the comic would be like, why are you taking this younger girl? Or just like the economics of it, like you share hotel rooms. Yep, yep. Like it just isn't an industry where like it's easy for like young kind of women.
And it's also, I think for me, like going on the road, like with male comics back in the day, there also was a little bit of like, you know, I'm not saying they're cheating. I'm not saying whatever their behavior on the road is. There's a little bit of like, I don't want to have to feel guilty around this person. I don't want to have a girl looking at me being like, what are you doing? Why are you hanging out?
I don't
want
to be judged. Yep. I don't want to be cock blocked. There's
gossiped about, which is it's your show. It's your career. You can book who you want to open for you.
But in other work environments, it's easier for like men to mentor women who are younger than them. It's just an easy, because you're not literally on the road together. It's just,
it's so, mentoring is literally
mentor.
They tour. Mentor. Only.
Mentor.
We'll tour and we'll tell you what, yeah, how it goes.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't mean to, I feel like when I said I wrote about it, I felt like a panic in your eyes. And I love that. I want to bottle that up.
No, the panic was more the frustration that I haven't gotten to read the whole book yet.
No, it's fine. It's I haven't gotten to read it.
You know, because I have not read my own book.
Yeah.
What are you, insane? Do not read your own book.
Yeah.
I strongly discourage. Ladies, listen up. Father's Day is creeping up on us faster than a creepy uncle at a family reunion. And if you haven't gotten a gift for dear old dad yet, you're in luck. Manscaped has got your back and your dad's cojones. Trust us, your dad will be thanking you for keeping his balls in check. Your dad or your daddy, too. You know, let's either. Dead Dad's Club, also your daddy, your baby daddy, whoever it is. Look, and it's not just a gift for daddy. You and mom will appreciate the results too, if you know what we mean. So don't wait any longer. Use code Whitney at checkout for 20% off and free shipping. Your dad and his package will thank you for the most memorable Father's Day gift ever. Imagine surprising your dad with a sleek, well-designed, optimized body hair trimmer that says your balls will thank you on the box. Look at this. Beep. They also have other amazing products like cologne, crop mop, ball wipes, crop reviver, ball toner, and crop preserver, and ball deodorant. They cover it all. For all the females listening, you'll appreciate this part. Manscaped products are cruelty-free, paraben-free, dye-free, and vegan. Get 20% off and free shipping with promo code Whitney at manscaped.com. Get your dad a gift you know he will actually use. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use code Whitney. Don't forget that you came from your dad's balls. This year, show your original home some love with Manscaped.
I wrote this book and it's about 15 years of being in comedy for the most part. One of my inspirations was reading Bossy Pants and her chapters on work. And
when when that book came out, I literally thought it was for me.
Yeah. So
that's how, like, I feel like everyone probably thought that, but I was like, what would I have done without this book? It made me feel like I wasn't losing my mind.
Yeah. So, and I love like the quote where Lauren Michaels says, never tell a crazy person they're crazy. Like those are words to live by. I love getting kind of work advice. That was the most interesting part of the book to me. So then when I started writing this one, I was like, what do I want to talk about? And it kind of shifted towards work. And so just being in comedy in different capacities for the past 15 years. And yeah, there's just one chapter where I just kind of talk about being a young comic and how hard it was to get to that next level because, you know, I opened for male comics in New York or Chicago when I was there, but I never was invited. I didn't even realize it until I went on tour with you. I was like, I've actually like never gone on like something that would feel like an official tour with a headlining comic. I've done festivals, I've headlined myself, but I haven't like been like a feature of like officially going on tour until.
That's interesting.
I know.
That's
wild. I know. But I also, I worked at like Letterman and the Daily Show. So like I didn't have like a period of many years where I was like just focusing on stand-up. And then when I did, after I left the Daily Show, I did like Edinburgh. So those aren't like, I just kind of did my own thing without going, I didn't go through the ranks like a traditional stand-up would.
You know, I'm a admit a jump around. You know me. You've worked with Sacha Baron Cohen, David Letterman, Jon Stewart.
Almost Roseanne.
Almost Roseanne.
My first day.
I had worked on the first iteration of the reboot of Roseanne when it came back. And then season two of that, you know, it did very, very well. We worked very hard on it. Was very proud of it. And your name kept, I was like, Jenna's got to be in this room, you know, because it was, she had voted for Trump very publicly. And, but she was very, what's the word? Fair about going, I don't want this to be a right-wing show. Like, I want.
I was really excited to work for Roseanne. I wasn't writing for like a show, like I, a network show wasn't so much on my radar because a lot of them are not shows that I think I would thrive in. But I was like, I really was excited to work for her. So
it didn't feel like a network show when we were doing it. It felt really like.
Well, it's Roseanne, mm-hmm. who is this iconic working class feminist hero from the 90s. And she's come back and now she supports Trump. And it's like the first year of his presidency. And it's the most watched show on TV. And it felt really exciting to be the prospect of being at that table. Mm-hmm. And working with her or pushing her. I was very excited for that.
And she wanted to be pushed. Like Jackie's character in the show, Sarah Gilbert, Darlene's character in the show, she very much wanted that to be the complete opposite and to recreate the fissure that was happening in America and have these like honest conversations of what actually would reflect the tension that was happening in these living rooms of someone vote, one person voted for yeah. Trump, one person voted red, blue. How do you sit at a table together after that?
Yeah, and try to shift. I mean, I don't know. I was really excited. And then I started following her on Twitter before the show started or the second season of the reboot started. And she was wackadoo. And so I actually, and my tweets were fine in comparison, but I deleted my whole feed after reading her tweets because I was just like, this is crazy. I don't think anyone should have a documentation of anything they say online ever. And I just.
You deleted yours mm-hmm. is a reaction.
Yeah. It's like I do it every so often. It's kind of like a digital colonic where I'll just yeah. like, be like, bye. Anyway.
And like what are the chances that one of these is like. Gonna age well,
right?
Like, you know,
right. And also, you don't want to give the AI. We don't want to give AI more information than they already have. Even right. though they, you delete them, they still probably have that information. Right, right, right. But just whatever. So, my
tweets are meant to be ephemeral. I think that's like Snapchat is smart about that. It's like,
well, don't they can't? Isn't that the whole thing where like you can save a Snapchat? Wasn't the Chris?
Yes, but I feel like it's like you'd have to go out of your way to screen grab it and then right. in perpetuity.
Well,
like
it's not that. It's just that, right?
Yeah, but if what
but
I do?
You have to be. No, like out of your way. Meaning like,
I'm just saying,
but you have to be like, you have to be like looking into the future.
But I like the idea of you know, let's say we're in court and someone's like, Jenna posted this thing on Snapchat 10 years ago. Here's the screen grab. Right. Everyone's going to go, why did you screen grab it? You
yeah.
weirdo.
Yeah,
you know
yeah,
what
yeah.
I'm saying? It's yeah. almost on the person that was like prepared to snitch.
Restraining order.
Whereas on Twitter, if it's public record, it's like, oh, we went back and found this thing. Right. But if it's like you were just sitting on this thing, like the snitch yeah. energy, it almost is like.
Yeah, it's creepy.
Yeah, you're both equally guilty.
It's at the hearing for their restraining order, which is a callback to something we were talking about.
Like when someone's like, oh, someone did something, you know, sketchy on an IG live. I have the recording of it. It's mm-hmm. like, why were you recording it in the first place? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's almost like,
yeah,
it's spooky.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, I was heading onto the CBS Radford lot in an Uber because I'm still really bad at driving. And I saw her tweet. I do write about it in the book.
Did you... Okay, great.
I screenshot. No, I just thought.
Did you see the tweet before you saw the shitstorm?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't remember, but I do remember thinking, should I remember thinking, should I not take this job? Well, is it problematic of me to take this job? Am I profiting off of white supremacy if I take the job? And then I was like, well, Wanda Sykes is still on the show, and as long as she's on the show, maybe, you know, you're just justifying all the things because it's like a lot of money in the first writing job for network. It would have been my first network writing job, and I cleared my calendar and I needed the money. And then I walked in and I saw that Wanda's office was next to mine. I was like a huge, I still am. She's one of my favorite comics.
Best.
And I looked down at my phone and they're like, Wanda Sykes is leaving. Roseanne. And so then, and then the decision was kind of made.
It happened so fast.
That the show was put on pause.
It happened so fast.
Yeah.
So we've been circling each other trying to work together in some iteration. Yeah. Can I ask, in terms of working for Jon Stewart, David Letterman, Sacha Baron Cohen, like, you know, well, first I want to ask, Letterman, there's the rumor that he doesn't talk to the writers.
It's not a rumor. I met him my first day. The writer that was hired before me was Joe, I forget his last name. I should know it. Something.
Joe Comedy.
He is Joe Comedy. He's very, very funny. I'll get it in a second. But it took them like 6 years to introduce him to Letterman. And then I got to meet him my first day. And when I met him, he offered me a lollipop. And he said, this is going to be a terrible place to work, but I'll look it on your resume. But he offered me a lollipop and I didn't take it. And I laughed when he did because I was like, you just had a very public sex scandal. Like, what, am I supposed to suck on this lollipop in this meeting? Like, why are you? No, because the head writer didn't take the lollipop. His agent was in the room. He didn't take the lollipop. So I was like, what? You guys all want, what? And so I laughed, but they didn't even get that. It was like, he didn't even register that.
Was
like,
it in a bowl?
Yeah, it was a bowl of lollipops. He was like, do you want a lollipop? And I said to one of the head writers who was like sweating bullets, because he had hired me and it was like.
Is it Joe Grossman?
Yes. Joe Grossman was the Joe Comedy. This was Eric Stengel was sitting there, and Eric was really nice, but he was just like probably. He was nervous around Dave himself, and that's always a weird sign when the head writer is nervous around the host.
The eggshells when there's like a it used to be when you would go into Ellen, people would be like, she's in a good mood today, and you're like, why is everyone's head?
I heard about the gum. Was it gum or breath mint?
Oh, you wait
with Ellen.
With my story about that?
Wait, that's your story? I heard a story that people need to chew gum around Ellen or something.
That's so interesting that you heard that, because one of the most devastating moments of my life is when Ellen, I saw her. I didn't know I was going to see her. That's one of these, you know, we have to go to these like Emmy parties, agency parties. I think we think we have to go to these. There are these parties with agencies and such, you know. 8 years ago, I thought I had to go. You make yourself present. It makes an agent want to work harder for you. In reality, it's just demystifying you and making you look desperate and sad. And, you know, they see how annoying and shrill I am. And they're just like, she's not going to fit into any of these boxes that would actually make us money off her. I went one time with a very successful producer director to one of these events. And a famous actress walked up to him. It was like, hey, how are you? So good to see you. Walked away. And he just went, she wants everyone to know she lost the baby weight. So a lot of times showing up to these things is just the re-upping of just letting everyone know, this is how I look now. The work has settled.
Oh my God.
I'm not pregnant. My thighs don't touch. Like, it's almost like a check-in.
Yeah.
Like a physicality check-in.
Yeah.
We get our hair and makeup done every couple of years, go to the events just to remind the people that represent us that we're still fuckable. Thing. She wants me to know she lost the baby weight. It was just like and I was like, that's exactly what that was.
But even if it wasn't, the fact that the producer director said that, it's like, is that just how you look at all women all the time? You know what I mean? Like, what if she literally was just saying like, hi. And I mean, I understand that it is like a debutante party for like an actress coming out being like, look at me now. But also, what if like the... I don't know.
Fun. We don't have a good time. I've never gone to one of those parties and left and felt full, fulfilled. Oh
it just made me like,
proud.
What are they saying about like what? I don't know. Yeah.
So I had met Ellen before at the People's Choice Awards, which this is such an embarrassing story. So People's Choice Awards, you know if you're going to win beforehand, I believe. Okay. Spoiler alert. So, because they want you to be there to be able to accept it, whatever. So it's my first People's Choice Awards. We're there for two Burke girls, Kat Dennings and Beth Bears, Michael Patrick King, me, Jen Coolidge. Like, we're all sitting in a row. At these events, there are seat fillers, which I have been one. When I started and was broke, you get paid $50 cash they're all like meth addicts shaking. Like, they need $50 cash. Like, if it's cash, it's a different group of people than if it's like, well... You'll get
you
the
have
check,
a bank account,
right?
Yeah.
And so so there are often seat fillers that just kind of sort of are sitting amongst celebrities as well. Mm-hmm. So this is the way that I justified how this happened. So Ellen's sitting in front of me. Ellen's sitcom was a very big deal for me.
Of course.
Martin and Ellen were very big for me. Ellen's sitcom was genius. You know, and then Friends came along and started to kind of eclipse it in a lot of ways. And that show would even make fun of Friends. Like, I don't know if anyone was like following it, but I remember one time, I think it was the Janine Garofalo episode. There was an episode where Ellen was trying to be friends with Janine Garofalo's character in the show. And Janine Garofalo came in and was like, can I get a mint tea almond latte or something? She's like, we don't have that. You might want to try Central Perk. They make things like that. You know, like she started putting it in the show. I thought that was so funny. There was just so many silly genius things in there. I was just such a big fan, you know, of Ellen's. And I'm sitting, she's right in front of me. Her and Portia come in, sit right in front of me. I'm like, and she turns around to, I guess, look at Michael Patrick King or whoever I'm with and looks at me, eye contact. First time I've ever made eye contact with Ellen, someone that I've looked up to for a very long time. I mean, watched her special, like studied her. And I, when I get nervous, I do start to talk in a Southern accent.
Can you do it?
I'm not nervous right now, so I don't think I can. Hey. Well, it was just, I just kind of get like, kind of like just default to like, oh my God, I'm such a big fan. Like I just,
you become Kelly Clarkson.
I started, it's 100. I don't know what it is. My inner child is Southern or my inner teen fan. And I was like, I'm such a big fan. Oh my God. And I just blurted. I know people who came out as gay to their parents because they saw the episode where she came out as gay on the loudspeaker at the airport, you know? So it's like, and I was like, just make it short and sweet and concise. And I was like, I'm such a big fan. Thank you for everything you have done. So many people I know's lives are better because you exist kind of thing. I said something very quick. And if I may say, eloquent, lovely, I nailed it. And she just went, okay. And I was like, and then in my brain, I went, oh, she thinks I'm a seat filler. It's fine. It's fine. She thinks I'm a seat filler. I look like someone that needs $50 right now. And I do. I did, and I do. And then I go to this event, one of these silly Emmy parties. I run up to my agent is talking to someone. I don't know who. I see my agent and talking to someone else. I run up to my agent, give him a hug. I'm feral. I'm a feral person. I shouldn't go to these parties. I don't know how to behave. I interrupted a conversation. It was stupid. And then turns out he's talking to Ellen. So I go up, hug him, and I turn around and Ellen's there. And I'm like, ugh. And I had had that experience already. So I'm just like embarrassed. And I was like, hi, I'm Whitney. We actually met one time. Of course, I'm just self-destructing. And
you're being totally rational and normal the whole entire time. Just FYI, I would keep going.
Famous people, if you're famous, you have to understand your impact on people. You don't get to be like, I'm taking the night off of being famous. You're famous. You have one name.
Yeah.
You don't get to have one name and then decide everyone and be impatient with people being nervous around you. You decide you wanted to be an icon. You worked hard to be it. Now you have to like allow people to worship you. I don't know what to tell you. And I was chewing gum. I was like, I'm Whitney, and I'm so sorry. And I actually met you at the People's Choice Awards, and I was like, I'm sorry if I insulted you or was talked too much or something. And I just went on a little bit of a embarrassing ramble, and then she just went, so do you always chew gum? So I'd been chewing gum at the People's Choice Awards.
So she doesn't, it was a, what? What?
Do you always chew gum?
I've never interacted with Ellen. I know nothing.
So I don't think she didn't like when I was chewing gum.
Oh, maybe it was a Breathman thing. I don't know. I just heard a story that people that like she had that it's just like there's lore, you know, with these people. Mm-hmm. I don't know anyone else who was offered like a dum dum lollipop by David Letterman.
Dum dum is the it was a dum dum way to bury the lead.
Yeah, it was a dum dum.
The dum dum.
Yeah, he's
is
like
the,
this female writer I had to hire for good PR.
Look at this dumb, this blonde female
this
writer.
Blonde
dum
female
dum.
Writer who looks similar to the intern I had a relationship with. Do you want a lollipop? If I had taken it, I would have been running Worldwide Pants by now, or whatever that company's called. I should have taken the lollipop. But I don't know. The Ellen thing, I just heard like, oh, she had a thing where maybe people needed like when you have so much money, you can just be in, like, you just don't want to smell bad breath ever. So maybe that was her thing. I don't know. I don't know Ellen. I don't know anything about Ellen. But with Letterman, it was, yeah, he just.
But also, I think if you can smell someone's breath at the office, you're too close anyway.
Well, in a post-COVID times.
You're too close. You're
too close.
When people say, like, this person has bad breath, I'm like, how did you get, why did you?
I've smelled bad. I mean, definitely smelled bad breath.
Oh, like a halitosis that's like a morning breath halitosis.
Yeah.
Thing. When people, I am at the point where I let people know. If it's like a severe halitosis, like it feels like something has died inside you.
Yeah.
I'll be like, you have that morning breath thing. Like if it's like something that's permeating, like an effluvium that's distracting.
Yeah.
Because that bad breath, like that makes me physically ill. Because I'm like, if I can smell your breath, that means I've breathed the inside of your gastrointestinal tract.
Well, it's rotting teeth. It's like, that's what it is. It's like, I heard this thing that I was so excited about, but it's not true. Because, like, so I heard it's total junk science. So if you're just tuning in and you listen to the next part, it won't be accurate. But I heard that dentists kill themselves at higher rates because they're smelling, like, death all the time because it's, like, rotting teeth decay. I think that's just an old wives' tale or something.
Why do the wives have to be old? Or is it the tale that's old or the wives?
It's right? That's so misogynistic.
Also, Handmaid's Tale, I always was like, tale also means ass. I always was curious.
I'm sure there's like a porn.
The Handmaid's Pussy. Like
the Handmaid's Taint. The thing that bothered me about the Letterman thing with the lollipop is that it was almost like when I giggled, it didn't register with anyone.
But no one else was offered a lollipop?
No one else took the lollipop.
But they were all offered.
It went like this. Would you let... You're me. I'm Dave Letterman.
What time is it?
Midday. I just got hired.
A lollipop feels like evening treat.
I just got hired. Yes, for like a, you know, septuagenarian.
On a holiday, like an Easter...
Yeah, no. So he had a bowl of lollipops. David Letterman, I sit down. He goes, would you like a lollipop? And I looked at the head writer who was sweating. Are you going to have a lollipop? I looked at his agent or manager in a powder blue suit from like literally cryogenically frozen from like the 70s. Are you going to have a lollipop? And then I giggled and I was like, I'm okay. And I giggled thinking like everybody would get that it's like a weird thing to ask. It's just the thing that bothered me was that.
Do you think he was trying to embarrass you or?
I think he just didn't think that I would like be in on the joke. I don't know if it's a joke or what.
Do you think he was joking?
I don't know what men talk about in rooms I'm not in. But if it's, I don't know. I don't know what I know what a sense of humor is. I don't think that they
were
like.
There are these little power moves.
I don't think that there was like a conspiratorial. I don't think it was consciously conspiratorial.
It was childish, but you don't get to do that if you're the boss.
If you're the boss who had a sex scandal a year ago with someone who looks like me. That's all it was.
That's just.
I came in being like. You know, but and so to your point, no, I had one interaction with him. I ran into him in the elevator.
But like he wasn't in the writer's room.
He didn't even go to rehearsal. It was like Weekend at Bernie's. He was like this dead person who had a show that he was checked out of and he didn't even go to rehearsals. And so, you know, the jokes that I was getting on were top tens, which he looked at, and these like little tosses to the, like the first thing I got on was like, so they do like, weird introductions they would do where the first one I got on was, and now please welcome second wave feminist Marxist Dave Letterman. And like he thought that was funny in 2011. And that was one of my first day. They were like, what are some intros for Dave? He picks them himself every day. He does a new weird quirky intro. So that was my first one that got on. And then I would get the top tens on because he would look at those directly and those were just jokes. Now with sketches, there were so many other people between me and him that it was so political to get a sketch on. And I didn't realize until there was this weird period of drama where the two head writers left and this guy, Matt Roberts, came in to be the head writer and I got a sketch on. And I can send you the clip. It was around Mardi Gras. Chris Christie was giving a speech against gay marriage. Dave, don't quote me, had thought like fat jokes were funny back then. So, and I wasn't a fat joke person, but Chris Christie felt like I was punching up because he was like anti-gay marriage. So it was a sketch where he's giving the speech. The actual Chris Christie is like very solitary and still when he talk, so it was really easy to be able to do this. Now it would be called a deep fake, but we got this body double who was this guy who had Christie's body type, put him in front of a green screen, and we had him, you know, just stand there, and then, like, at one point...
Heartbreaking.
Heartbreaking. And he flashes everyone. He flashes everybody. But it really looked like Chris Christie. He got paid well, SAG. I'm terrible. But we got Chris Christie. It looked like Chris Christie was saying marriage should be between a man and a woman and flashed everybody.
Right.
So it was like this very effective anti-Christie, you know, pro-gay marriage segment.
Yeah.
And Dave loved the image of Christie flashing everybody that for months and months later, having nothing to do with Mardi Gras, having nothing to do with Chris Christie giving a speech, he would just show that image. And I got like, I just got residual checks for years after I left the show just because he kept using that little
bro
thing of Christie.
Thanks, Dave.
Yeah. But it just was because it tickled him, Chris Christie flashing people.
He, like, Dave, this is so silly. Like, I'm the more serious the world, the our trials and tribulations get.
Really quickly, sorry, I thought Pat was sleeping, but it's the dog.
You heard snoring?
Because we're just talking shop. We're not like
two lassies talking about how hard it is.
The stalkers aren't like, you know, we're not, we haven't even got, you know, I don't know like how much of the first like 20 minutes of this podcast is going to be entertaining to like your stalkers who are just like waiting to beat off. They're just like, waiting. They're just sitting there like holding their dicks like, me. I know I don't want to talk about it.
So is Jenna going to suck on the lollipop or not? Where's the fucking lollipop? Let's go, dum-dum. That's so funny. I forgot my train of thought. I did hear, though, speaking of stalkers, that someone that worked there is a page, which still unclear of what that job even is, but everyone
unpaid intern or paid intern.
Yeah, it's just the they that he has a show a year for just his stalkers to like manage them.
What?
Like, cause like when people are
his office wasn't on our floor anymore. We were 14, he was 13, and he had like the security was crazy because he probably had like stalkers who had worked for him.
And it's not even like that's a big thing. But like a lot of times when these people have these parasocial relationships with celebrities, they're not necessarily going to do you harm, but they think they need to protect you. They think they're married to you. Yeah. And a lot of the Gavin De Becker types or security types, they go like, you know, if you can manage them and they get to see you once a year, they have something to look forward to.
Right.
They get to stay in their reality,
yeah,
whatever simulation they've created, and they come and they leave, and that's how you keep them at bay.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, I think the idea was that once a year, everyone that thinks they're married to him comes to the show, and then
like a stalker palooza.
Really?
I didn't know about that.
Yeah, and
Lilith
then
stalker.
So they have, because it's like some people that have this fantasy intrigue, this fantasy addiction.
Yeah.
It's really like they need something to look forward to. They don't want to be in a relationship with an actual person.
Right.
They pick someone that's parasocial, project onto them, and then it's all internal and in their head.
Yeah.
And then they look forward to it. They're
but know. Now with the streamers and so much content, the stalkers are just like, what?
I don't know how to. There's just two. They're polygamous now. They're parasocially polygamous. So what, working with Sacha Baron Cohen, I have a friend that used to work with him. I want to ask, first of all, did you like take anything big from him, like just in terms of what to learn? I'm big on being mansplained. I'm big on learning from men. They do know a lot. People are like, I don't want to be mansplained. I'm like, well, please mansplain me because you have the information.
Yeah.
Give it to me.
Yeah.
Did you learn a lot from him?
Yeah. I mean, working for Sasha, it was very recently and I'd already done so much stuff in that kind of prank space. But that type of stuff is my dream scenario. And the period dance is a good example of something where, you know, our generation of female comics, I personally didn't feel like I was encouraged to like joke about periods. I know that we had talked about this once where you felt differently. I just didn't think periods were like a thing that I would ever see in like a major motion picture.
I'm so I don't remember what the conversation was that we had about it. I've been on birth control for so long that I don't have any jokes about periods because I haven't had them in so long.
But the women in like the 80s like would joke about periods. And so then there were like the stand-up comedy just kind of, I don't know, there weren't a lot. Maybe the women of like 80s, 90s joking about it. Or I just picture like shoulder pads. I don't know if Elaine Boozler even joked about that because Elaine Boozler was so funny. I remember I watched her White House Correspondents' Dinner speech a little while ago when Michelle Wolf was getting shit. And I was like, this was just as edgy and funny. And I think we have a tendency to forget the women who came before us or in our culture, just forget history and that things have... People have already done this shit before.
That's right.
But anyway, back to the Sasha thing. I loved being able to like pitch an idea and then have him not only like run with it and make it better, but have people actually see it. Like so much of the stuff that I do self-focus, nobody sees it. Mm-hmm. If a tree falls in the woods and the woods is a, you know, like
Quibi.
Niche Quibi CISO. My specials on CISO, you know, like
don't even
streaming show doesn't make a sound. Is no.
I want to ask about the Sasha thing. I just am fascinated by people that have made their own like war empires. You know, Sasha seems like he does his own thing. He doesn't need anyone. He's so self-sustaining and self-generating, you know, and I always want to like learn from those.
It's
people.
A village. He has a lot of really great people around him. Really, really great people. It's really hard to do that. It's hard to. I mean, I can't. I don't know how much I can talk about.
Yeah.
But they're really incredible producers working with him.
Something you do so brilliantly, which I did the show Punked, which is like a prank show, but you have a level of bravery that when you're interviewing people for Indefensible. And the work you did with Sacha Baron Cohen of putting people on camera that are not actors and getting something out of them, you know, what have you learned about human nature?
It's a combination of everybody is the hero in their own story and they want to be heard.
Yep.
And then I do think people just underestimate me because no one knows who I am in a good way. But also I'm like this random, like blonde white lady. I don't think they think I'm, you know, thinking about.
They don't think that there's any surreptitious motives or like,
yeah,
they feel so comfortable that you're not going to
fuck with them or just, I wouldn't even say fuck with because I really, really try in all the videos. Like I don't take people out of context ever. If someone says like my favorite color is blue, I'll never change it to my favorite color is green. And I mean that on like a real level in terms of the stuff we're talking about, because it's heavy stuff and I have a lot of integrity in the process. Deceive people.
Right.
But I think that, yeah, I think it's a combination of them just not thinking that I'm like up on what I'm up. I mean, there's a thing in Indefensible where this guy sat across from me and I just posted it on TikTok. But it really sounds like Pat is snoring.
Now Frank is now in, I'm sorry, my dog is now in a dream where he's growling at someone.
It's great.
Frank! But this is like,
it's good. It's good.
Apologies.
It's fine. But this guy Scott Saffon at HLN, the piece was about Casey Anthony. And it also is a larger.
Which, by the way, you know that when that was happening.
She had her show on.
Oh, I had a couple feelers put out towards me about playing her.
You did?
Uh-huh. She's the brunette, right? The drown her kid?
Allegedly. But not.
I have umbrella insurance.
No, but not because she was not found guilty.
All right. Is she the one? Yeah, everyone thought I looked like her.
What would you want to? That's so interesting.
Yeah.
I feel like you'd make a good Casey
Anthony. I agree. I'm like very ready to play. I'm holding out for playing.
Is it Maxwell?
I mean, it's.
Yeah. It's, now I can't unsee it.
I know. Oh,
gosh. The Casey Anthony story is fascinating. I mean, it's not fascinating. She probably current, but just the media around it, the media hoopla around it. I talked to this guy, Scott Saffon, who was the producer of Nancy Grace. I think she was mentioned on Nancy Grace like over 100 times. And it was just like this funny bit where he had no idea who I was. And I kind of had fun with that. But that's not as interesting as the fact that Casey Anthony, our episode of Indefensible, I learned that... her defense was essentially like crowdsourced and paid for by CBS. It was paid for by CBS. It's a whole long story. It's on the episode. But yeah, her defense had access to like a mock jury of people who had all the information on her case and were just kind of wondering what went down. And they were like, well, maybe it was an accidental drowning and her dad seems suspicious and maybe he is involved. And her defense watched this allegedly. I will get sued if I say it happened. And then was able to form the defense that it was like an accidental drowning.
How have you just netted out in terms of your faith in the legal system after making the show Indefensible? It's about sort of, you know, can you just explain in two sentences?
The show is kind of like The Daily Show meets Dateline. But instead of it being true crime, because it was originally a true crime show and I don't love true crime. It's like we're using true crime as like a Trojan horse to get people who watch true crime. A lot of white women. I was less interested in like, oh, this person got murdered than how does this keep happening? How are people not brought to justice, but also how are people wrongfully convicted? Just the system, mm-hmm. I thought was more interesting. Because I do think we're at like a peak true crime and it's just gratuitous and it just creeps me out. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, how do I kind of do something that doesn't feel as dirty? Well, if I can educate people as to the flaws in the system, maybe that'll help inform, you know, if they ever end up on a jury, don't necessarily believe this expert witness. He's being paid by the defense. He could be
that
full
is
of shit.
So crazy. Yeah.
Don't like necessarily believe like the, you know, the whatever. I don't know. But the prosecutor's take on something, you know,
it's so just weird. It's like I think Hollywood is so obsessed with legal shows, true crime and stuff. I did my first legal show.
Yeah.
You helped me navigate that.
Accused.
The Fox show. Accused. And it's funny because like doing a legal show for the first time, I kind of was like, and you get into it, you're like, courtrooms, real courtrooms are so much more bullshit, dramatic acting.
It's theater.
It's theater.
It's really theater.
You're
to
like
the point where like the
community theater though.
It's community like, theater. The attorneys dress certain way. Like the defense attorneys can dress like crazy.
But it's not even. But actors, like people that get attention a lot or get to be on TV, they're wearing sweatpants. They're kind of just, they get their box checked in terms of getting the attention they need. They get that satisfaction, whatever drives them. You're like, oh, this is the Super Bowl for these people. Like this is their moment to shine. They're acting.
I mean, they use props. Like in Florida, when we talked to a defense attorney, he was talking about how he used I don't know if they're like 3D glasses or just that they were using actually like what's it called? I'm sorry, my brain is so fried right now.
VR goggles
for the jury so that they could see things about the crime. It's completely theatrical.
It's kind of fascinating to me because it's like I look at court cases and I'm like, now this is acting.
Yeah.
You know?
They're acting.
It's
yeah.
so manipulative and yeah. so it's just like
yeah.
it,
and
it
expert just witnesses are often problematic. The science that they'll use in a courtroom and a lot of times it's junk science. DNA is one of the only ones that is pretty consistent, but like bite marks, blood spatter, all that it's not based on science. And shaking baby syndrome, apparently that's like not really a thing, but they end up but
shaking babies.
There's like this, I don't want to get too into it, but there are all these things that prosecutors will say, oh, the way that the blood spattered on the wall indicates this. And it's not actually scientific. Like there's no there's no scientific community that says like, oh, this science can exist in a courtroom. There's no barrier to entry. Mm. So a lot of junk science is being debunked, but a lot of it also is allowed in a courtroom. And even if somebody says this is faulty, it's that whole adage, like you can't unring a bell. If a jury hears
it, right.
Oh, the dog smelled that guy was the murderer. Yeah. It's hard for them to unhear that.
And then it's filtering through their experience of like that tracks. And I kind of want to go home and I don't want to be, you know, this jury much longer.
And so those are things that when you hear about that, as someone who doesn't really know about the legal system, because I wasn't really in it, I've never really.
Have you ever been on a jury?
No, I almost got jury duty once.
Yeah.
And then I didn't get it.
Why are we so against it? Like, why are we like, oh, jury duty? I mean, I'm like chomping at the bit to be on a jury.
Well, it depends on the case. If it's a really boring medical malpractice case and it lasts months and months and you're paid like no money, it's probably really annoying.
Apparently,
But if it's like Donald Trump versus, you know, like E. Jean Carroll.
Apparently,
no, I would never be allowed on that.
Apparently, Catherine Keener went down. She was working on some movie. It might have been Where the Wild Things Are. Like, they had to push production. She went down and she got on a jury. And she was like for like 4 months or something, which is just so crazy. I'm fascinated by the idea. But I think if you're a public figure, they don't let you.
They're not going to let me because I have a true crime show. Yeah, you. I know too much. They're not going to let me on the jury. I just know too much. They want low information jurors. That's who they want. They want people that they can persuade.
Do you think that the legal system, if you could change anything about it right now, magic wand, what would you change?
With the legal system, it really is like, if you have money, you are insulated from a lot of injustice.
So be rich. Have money, general rule.
The system is very unfair towards people who have money, which I think everybody knows.
Yeah.
But people on juries should think about that when they get into the jury booth.
Can I ask from your, because I first became.
Is it a booth? Bucket?
Yeah, it's a bucket, yeah.
I went from being insanely jealous of you to being an insane fan.
Now you have
of
a
yours.
Kid and you don't. You, what?
No, that's when your Ted and Gracie, was it called? Right. The YouTube series you did about Ted Bundy.
Yeah.
And
but then nothing ever happened with that, so then I stopped being jealous. I went from being so jealous because you had so much potential.
Once I realized you got a cease and desist from the New York Times, I was like, I love her. This is being taken down. We'll be just fine. Mm. When you got the cease and desist from the New York Times, she was parodying their
wedding videos.
They used to do these wedding videos that were, you know, very silly.
This is a deep cut.
I'm obsessed with this this series that you did.
They just didn't like that we took their trademark. So then we put.
But why? What?
Well, it wasn't even that we parodied them. It was that we literally just took their trademark and people thought that it was a real video. And that was the intent of it because they had.
Why is everyone such a dork?
I know.
Aren't your viewers supposed to be smart enough to know?
But like the trademark attorney was like, this is all I fight for, you know? And I'm like, I get it. We did the one thing, you know, we literally took like the trademark and just put it on the screen. So. We just did the thing that, you know, it's supposed to do with the trademark. That's what that was about.
There's something going on with Ted. I don't know what it is, but I feel like he's acting like a different person.
And can I ask you, of anyone I know probably knows the most about murderers and people that get murdered. What is the common denominator in murderers and women that get murdered?
Or the people who get murdered?
Mm-hmm. Like,
is there a way to not get murdered? Is that what you're asking?
Is there a consistent pattern of, you know, whether it's drugs, whether it's, you know, like red flags, and how do you know someone's a psychopath? Is there a consistent thing you keep seeing that's like, oh, there it is, the ice pick. There it is. She was a cheerleader. There it is. She didn't have any parents.
I think that when you're first in a relationship, we've talked about this. We talked about like the idea of like love bombing. Mm-hmm. Like watch out for those kind of narcissistic gestures kind of over the control. When a lot of people who are murdered by people they know and love. And a lot of women who are murdered by murder are murdered by their partners.
Do you think murderers have always been murderers? Like, do you think murderers are psychopaths that, like, they're born and they're going to murder someone in their lifetime regardless?
No. I mean, I don't know.
Do you have control? Like,
I don't know. I have no idea. All I know is that when you are in relationships, like, abuse doesn't happen overnight. It starts kind of with grandiose gestures and then controlling type tactics. Where are you going? What are you, you know, I'm too sensitive to that. Like I really, when I was like dating, if somebody was like, what? I'm like, what are you doing next week? I'm like, you're controlling.
Well, see, but because that I think is, I'm so toxic because that to me, that's hot to me. You know?
Well, that was I was like just making a joke, but like if somebody like tracks your movements on your phone, you know, like, oh, let's have each other's like location on each other's phone. Like they're just like kind of controlly red flags that can kind of get, then you can kind of be in situations you want to be in.
That
and then like the financial
so
control
pretty.
Type stuff. Like what you were talking about earlier, you know, I think.
Well, yes, we were talking about.
I think a lot of abuse, it's like if women are, you know, empowered financially to leave situations, then they'll have an easier time out of them. But yeah, I mean, every episode of that show touched on a different topic. One of the hardest ones was the idea of like the criminalized survivors, like people who kill their abusers, then getting life in prison. That was a really tough episode because they did something wrong, but they, in a lot of cases, really had no other choice. And the system didn't, there's no nuance in the system to like see them as, it's like once you're a defendant, here's something I learned. Once you're a defendant, a criminal defendant, you are seen as a defendant. There's like very little nuance there of, you know, the circumstances around why you committed a certain crime or why you acted the way you did.
Are there any jokes that you like are feeling weird about? This podcast, like, and you're you, so worth doing. I'm so sick of bombing on a podcast. Like I just sometimes I'm just like, oh, I just want to like be funny. So.
Oh no, no, I know. Today we're both, I think we're both tired.
Are you doing more press? How, like when does press end with a book? So
I don't know how books work. I mean, you would know better than I do. I'm doing.
I really wouldn't. My book came out on the day of the Vegas shooting. So I was like, that we picked this week where no
but
other.
But everyone's book is going to come out on the day of a shooting.
Yep. So true. But this was.
It's a big one.
This was a big one. And I was in like, I remember I was in New York. I was in like hair and makeup at, you know, 4 a.m. about to do the Today Show. And it was just like 50 people.
Oh, God.
You know.
That one. We should just talk about this on
was
the pod.
Was it literally, am I exaggerating?
No, that guy, Stephen Paddock, maybe was his name, the killer.
Yeah.
I think it was Stephen Paddock or something. They still don't really have, that was like a lone gunman, white guy shooter.
Stephen Paddock, 64-year-old man from
and
the
they
state.
Just never, like he was like, had no red flags. That
58
one,
people.
Yeah, he just sniper, he just like barricaded
at
himself.
At a country music festival.
Yeah.
Because I kind of go like, when I wrote my book, I kind of was like, I guess books are over now or something. But I feel like there's a, people are so maxed out on their screen. They're so maxed out on these like little, like tiny bits of information. There's something just like so, I don't know, refreshing about just being like, I'm going to read a book and like thoroughly be
and not
immersed.
Be on your phone. It's really, I mean, I've been reading books lately and it actually, it's like, oh, I can just put my phone away and just like kind of like go into some other world.
But you're also like, comedians books are the perfect ones, I think, for our brains right now, because also you are like, jokes per minute is just, every sentence is like a brilliant tweet. Like
what?
You.
Well, I mean, I didn't even like go through the script and punch it up because I was like, I sent in the final draft when I was like getting into production on the True Crime Show. But I like it. It's not.
It is funny. What is that? Is it just because I mean, that's
it's
a very.
It's not funny. It's right. not funny, but it's not like, I'm not like trying to be like David Sedaris is my point. I'm not trying to be like,
right.
You know, I'm like,
but I just don't think, I think you and I were similar in this way that I don't know what's funny about people. When I'm being dead serious, people laugh. I've never told a joke in my life. That's my whole thing. Is that like I'm
you
serious.
Are very funny.
But I'm not, I think sometimes.
You're not trying to be funny.
This is inherently funny because you're
thank you, but
a
I'm not,
pretty
I wasn't
blonde
trying
girl
to be
trying
funny.
To do comedy. It's funny.
Yeah, that my friend was like, don't underestimate how funny people think misogyny is.
Yeah, don't underestimate how funny it is that you think.
Women's pain, but
the fact
this
that
book
you
is
thought
not about
this
that.
Was a career path is hilarious. The fact
yeah,
that
the
you
fact
and I
that
both
you,
thought
that we thought that's funny.
The fact that you and I both thought that
you could dream that
a
you could
woman
actually get
talking
paid
for an hour was, be, thing, was a business
was
a,
yeah
is pretty funny.
I do. Oh God, there's so much more I want to talk. But when I like finished this, I was like, wow, like because it's past 15 years. I'm like, that was really hard. I can't believe I'm still doing this. You know what I mean? Like when you just kind of document these stories, like I don't mention his name. But like how he had this unwritten rule where
he was the booker for a big
the booker
festival.
For Montreal. If you are, if you
he
audition,
wore a fedora. If
he
that
wore
helps.
A fedora. If you audition,
when you're gonna tell, I mean, I guess you would know more about comedy than me. He wore a fedora around hundreds of comedians at a time. Like that is a level of.
But if you, that, so if you're a female comic and you wore high heeled boots on stage. In an audition, it's an automatic unwritten rule that you like are not going to get that. That
can you imagine
audition.
What would happen if I wore a fedora? Can you imagine what would happen? I
you would not get assaulted.
Yeah, I was just, I mean, that's the only.
You would not get harassed. By
the way,
pub.
I was just saying.
Maybe
like,
we need to be wearing fedoras.
Mace is out. Just wear a fedora down the street. No one will be. But also, it's like I dyed my hair blue, and people thought I was on meth.
Yeah.
So to wear a fedora, I can't even imagine.
But it was just like the idea of like, oh, wow, there were these people that were these gatekeepers that had tremendous power over our career success and our ability to survive and pay rent and make a living. And they would write you off for an arbitrary reason, like wearing shoes that they like didn't want you to wear
that
on stage.
Happened. You were wearing.
It was an unwritten rule that I've talked to other female comics that I mean, but a lot of other people.
Yeah.
It was just a thing. He would tune out if you wore high heeled boots on stage. He just wouldn't. He just like didn't take you seriously. That was just one of many things.
Someone in that a was fedora.
I know, but that was the thing that we found out about. Think about like I don't even know where that came
How
from. But
how dare you?
But there are so many people. There are gatekeepers at every step. That because our industry is unregulated, there's no like human resources. There are people that just write you off for asinine reasons more so than in other industries. It's all subjective. It's all so about subjective. Your relationships.
And
it's not
a lot of people that are damaged, and a lot of people that you know were out here advertising.
And it's not just the men; there are like women gatekeepers too, and they
no
want to be
meaner to me in this business than women. Comedy Central. There was a show called Live at Gotham.
I mentioned them in the book too, but I don't say their names.
Okay,
but I know exactly the show you're talking
140 about. 140 comics were booked. I did a set. I'm not saying I was the funniest comedian on the planet at the time, whatever it was, 13, 14 years ago.
I want to find the statistic that I found for you, but keep...
14 years ago, drive out to Brea Improv, drive 2 hours, do my set. 140 comedians got Live at Gotham. I did not. And then 6 months later, I did the roast of Joan Rivers, and they gave me a three-roast deal and an hour special and a thing for a series. But it was like 6 months earlier, the three women at Comedy Central were not... I mean... It's like, so I'm not
I'm
the
trying
person.
To find, like, I actually went through and I'm not going to be able to find it, but did you ever get like a Comedy Central Presents?
Yes, I did an hour. And then they came to me and they said, we'll give you a half hour. I was like, you're going to give me an hour because.
Good for you.
Like it was just so, there was a time though, where a lot of the people that ran comedy or made big decisions, they were kind of just women that wanted to be friends with comics. They would come hang out at the clubs. They would be at festivals, hanging out with the comics, like flirting. And you're just like, what are you? Is this a business or not? I'm here to fucking make something of myself. And I don't know how to, you know, it's funny because I've been accused so much of like Whitney's ambitious and she networks. I'm like, I feel like I'm the only person that doesn't. I'm like here, I got my notebook. I'm not like hanging out with people. I don't do well socially. I was like, if I have to socialize my way to being successful in comedy, like I'm never going to make it. You know?
Yeah, no, I mean...
Like, I have to be friends with the Booker of Montreal in order to get a thing? Like, it's just not...
Yeah, no, I'm trying to... I'm sorry, I'm, like, not... I'm not prepared, Whitney. But, to your point about people calling you ambitious, I remember when I first got into comedy in Chicago, I handed one of the women at Comedy Central my card because she'd seen me on an audition, and I got so much shit from the guy comics in Chicago for like, oh, you're so ambitious. I'm like, I'm just trying to pay my rent doing this thing I love that's really hard to do.
Ambitious? Like, whatever. Who's not?
And who's like, not? And it's like, yeah, because I'm not like getting wasted with you guys like after
I'm
shows.
I'm not here to like get girls to want to fuck me. I'm like literally, I just take this seriously. It's weird because there's this, I look back and everyone's like, how you were so successful. I was like, is that true? I kind of just didn't smoke weed and play video games all day. I just treated it like a serious job.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that as a female, I guess at the time.
It's threatening and weird if you like know what you want to do and you're doing it. I mean,
well, I just knew how long it took. I went all the greats, like Rodney Dangerfield didn't make it till 60. I remember going like, I can't wait that long. Like, I don't think anyone's going to want to see a 60-year-old woman talking about her pussy. Like, I just like knew. And I was poor. Like, I had to get successful. And I had to figure out, like, I gave myself, like, a couple years to get, like, some kind of carrot to stay encouraged. And I was like, I'm just going to, you know, a lot of people that get into comedy and acting and writing, like, they have some rich parent shit. They've got a trust fund. I didn't have any of that.
I had, like, when I was, like, at my, like, lowest income-wise, I had, like, 3 grandparents die within, like, a year. And it wasn't enough money, but there was this thing I write about in the book, how I fainted and I broke 3 teeth from smoking pot. And I like my grandpa died and he left me. It was a $10,000 savings bond. And it was like it had matured and the amount that it matured to was the exact amount it cost to fix my 3 front teeth.
Whoa.
Because, the dental insurance doesn't cover it. I just had always felt like it was like his ghost like strangling me to like get a real job. But
wait, you smoked weed and fell and broke
your teeth? I fainted on like an empty stomach. I had like smoked weed and I had like 2 glasses of wine.
I fainted right there when I had my first edible over the pandemic.
Okay, so
hit my head and I still have a bump.
I still have a bump there. Yeah, you get it. But anyway, but that's a weird story. That was like
edibles, you guys, it's not been, they're go back to the draw. They're not ready for market.
This isn't like a harrowing statistic or anything, but I was curious about like Comedy Central specials. And I found like just between a 3-year period, 2008 and 2011, of 88 comics given comedy specials on that channel, Comedy Central, only 10 were women. And that's like between like 1/9 and 1/8. But, mm-hmm. and people will say there weren't that many women working, but that, I have always found that to be false. There were so many women.
And we know those were different ones. It wasn't the same one twice or anything.
Same,
what like do you mean? The same, like Wanda Sykes having two.
No, there were 10. There were like 8 or whatever that number.
Because 10. I don't even think I could name. I don't even know if I could name them.
Maybe it was like
a half hours, hours.
Comedy that? Central presents specials. I think it was. I think
that's
it was
half hour. Hour?
Or maybe it was half hours. Half hours. But it was like 10 women over 3 years.
Which, by the way, I think we should go back to half hours. I want to do my next special as a half hour. I think people's like attention span, you know, I think that, or you can just go like, I'll do an hour every 2 years and a half hour. Cause there's some things that I'm kind of like, I don't want to keep talking about this for the next.
But I do want to say that you're done.
You know that all these people, they're going to listen to this and they're going to think you're talking about someone else. These narcissists, delusional narcissists, they're there were women that didn't help
everybody, her. Everybody's talking about this shit now. Sarah Schaefer has a really, really funny live show called Going Up where she like just talks about this thing. I don't want to spoil her joke, but she makes an allusion to Jeff Singer. I did a book show in New York where Joelle Johnson just got on stage and like talked about an experience with him. And it's like all these women that you guys
if you didn't want us to talk shit about you, you should have behaved better.
Yeah.
Why do we have to get treated like shit by you and then we have to
but it's
keep
like
your secrets
over,
forever?
Like the past like 15 years or whatever, or 20 years of like all these.
You
like,
don't get to wear a fedora for 20 years and get away with it. If you're going to mistreat people, it better be in a Kangol golf hat. The arrogance. You know how much more it hurts when someone rejects you in a fedora? An indoor fedora? Do you pack the fedora in the bag or do you wear it on the plane?
This is why they hate us.
There was different a different fedora. Do you have a hat box? Like, how dare you? It's just like insult to injury.
But you think it's just you. That's the other thing. It's like we think we're just the only ones going through this experience, but we're all going through
it. But also booking, it's the same thing with the intimacy coordinator. There's all these jobs that you're kind of like, how do you get this? How do you get the job of deciding what comedian's funny? You've never been a comedian.
How do people get intimacy coordinator jobs?
It's a 2-year-old job. So they're either coming from HR.
Anyone who's like, I'd be good at this, that's the person I would not trust.
Like
on a completely, I don't want to.
So I've had intimacy coordinator and I'm like, what were you doing 2 years ago before this job existed at all?
What are their qualifications?
A couple of them, because when I did a really brutal rape scene in the Fox show,
right.
Two of them were actually stunt coordinators because we treated it like a stunt.
And then they take like a class.
Which I really appreciated is that it was stunt coordinators. We treated it like a stunt. It wasn't something sexual.
Right. That makes perfect sense.
This is the first time I've ever done a sex scene.
But I just picture like a man with a ponytail and like a turtleneck being like, I'm an intimacy coordinator. And you're like, no!
The couple times I've had them, one time it was with Brett Goldstein on a pilot, and the intimacy coordinator came up with a Ziploc bag with gum and mints and was like, how are you guys doing? We were like, fine until you tried to.
Yeah, like a puppet.
It was just like a weird, like our
it's
breath.
It's too much.
Stop trying to make us it was like, it felt.
Like creepy, like a surrogate, like a
You guys aren't kissing enough. Do you need a mint? Like, I don't know.
That's weird.
Because sometimes like when you're in that situation, you kind of just have to. It gets more awkward when someone else tries to make less awkward. But then you're in situations where it is kind of feels like a freebie and you're kind of like, let's just, you know, no one has sex in a movie as a character differently. You're doing it the way you would actually do it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? And then there's always like the joke that's like, I mean, wouldn't it be worse if I don't get a boner?
Yeah.
And you're like, it would, bummer, whatever. There's that. But the intimacy coordinator I had in Toronto for the Fox show, she was great because she kind of just like she would just come in when like to go like, do you need anything? Like she didn't do it in front of us. But I remember I was trying so hard to make the guy feel comfortable that I was like, oh, it's fine. You know, like you're not gonna get a boner. Like I'll just talk. I was just making jokes or something. He had a girlfriend. I had a guy. I was just sort of being like, no, it's fine.
Yeah,
I'm numb. My friends are female or male.
Yeah.
My friends are male comics. You can pull your dick out. Like I'm like, just. And she pulled me aside and she's like, hey, so it's just the jokes. Like, you know, if we could take that down a little. Yeah, I was like, oh, no, I just want you to know I'm fine. Like, I am totally comfortable. She's like,
But he's not.
It's more for the men.
He's going to quit.
Everyone else is like, you're like, we know you're fine, but you can't. They're nervous. You know what I mean? I'm like, it's fine. Rate me. If I haven't come forward now, let's be honest. Will I? Like, it's, you know, I'd be like, I'd be like, force yourself to rate me on camera. It's the only way I can come. I was just being so, I was trying to make everyone not worry about me, but I was making it so much worse. I'd be like, oh, sorry. Just, you know, I'm not wet. That's just sweat. I'm swampy. Like, I just, it was not good. You know what I mean? Like, you're a dream.
Aww.
Even it is, if you've taken anything from today, is that even the most talented, successful people feel like a failure, even when things are going well. And and I should have like 70 times the self-awareness and shame that you have when you're on a podcast thinking you're not. Most of the time I'm like, I can't remember anything I'm saying. Anyway, nailed that. I'll walk out of here and be like, nailed it. And you're like, I can't remember what I was going to say. I'm like, yeah, that's this podcast. Is me trying to remember what I was going to say. And me trying to get my dog to not make so much noise. That
was so, it just sounds like there's a man. How funny would it be? It sounds like, or like Pat's just like asleep.
Just like, I know, there's, by the way, this is the thing.
It's like a snoring, like a
that
slow.
It keeps me the most humble. When I'm in here, like trying to be funny, it just, Frank is like, like fair. And then the other thing is I have like a cricket problem. I have crickets in my house everywhere, which as a comedian is just the most
it's
fucked
triggering.
Up.
It's gotta
yeah.
be triggering.
I literally, I'll
have to be on all the time.
No, I'll literally write a joke and I'll hear, and I'm like, fuck you. It is so rude. Like I'm hearing actual crickets every day that I'm trying. I'm just like, I hope my fucking ducks eat you. I love you madly.
Oh,
thank you for coming all the way out here.
Thank you for having me. I try to pretend it's not all the way out. Remember, because I don't want people to know where you live.
I don't, dude. I accidentally posted my home address on OnlyFans, and guess what? I got tons of DMs going, "You got to take that down. Your home, like OnlyFans, is a crew of people. Like they're cool. They want to pay women." They want to support that. Yeah. It's
that's cool.
It's devastating. The difference between OnlyFans DMs and Instagram and Twitter DMs are shocking.
Yeah.
They were like, that was really great. Like, thank you so much. And then they'll send like a tip. I'm like, stop tipping me. Like, they want to participate in your success. And it's like this really sweet group of people that's like they're not like, I'm just gonna go to Instagram and get that ass for free. Twitter has full on porn. You don't have to go to OnlyFans.
Yeah.
Like these are people that get off on
Instagram for sure.
These are people that get off on helping teachers get school supplies. It's weird. And then I posted, remember, because I got a home line, a landline, and I posted on Instagram the photo of the phone being like, just got a landline.
And they
it had the number written on the phone. You know how there's like a plastic strip that has the phone number on it? And I posted it and like 30 seconds later it rang and I was like, that was weird. I just took a photo of it and I was like, hello. And literally, no. So I was like, hi, I'm calling because Whitney just posted her phone number.
I just want you to know like you should do that.
By the way, this is making me feel awful because that didn't happen. Like, I posted my home address.
I'm like the Good Samaritan masturbator.
I literally posted my home address. No one showed up to murder me or rape me. Not one. The exact location, nothing. I posted my phone number, and people are just like, you might want to take that down.
Yeah.
You idiot. Like, they're just.
Yeah,
like,
it only takes one.
No one wants to kill. I don't know what to tell you.
Only fans.
I'm not worth going to jail for, Jenna. You're blonde. You are. No one wants to kill me. They won't get famous. I'm not getting on Nancy Grace.
Does Nancy Grace still have her show?
I don't know. No, I don't know. I don't think so. I just feel like she only cares if blonde girls get kidnapped.
Yeah. I mean, she's definitely not a good... She's definitely very problematic, but I saw her on Dancing with the Stars, and I don't know what it was, but I just, like...
She was on Dancing with the Stars?
She was on Dancing with the Stars, and I just was, like... I saw her humanity in this, like, way. Like, as, like, this kind of, like... I saw her vulnerability.
Well, she dedicated her life to trying to get kids found.
And her, like, Was it her fiance or someone was murdered? There's like a whole story.
Her fiance was a murderer.
Murdered. There's someone who
was murdered. Oh, that'll get you.
Or like her partner. I don't know what their relationship status was.
I just think if someone's loud and Southern, you just people hate them.
Or love them.
Or love them. Mm-hmm. But hookworm epidemic. Look it up. Part of why we think Southerners are stupid.
Because they get hookworm
back in the day.
Also lead poison, like, and just like a lot. Diesel.
Yeah. People like, people in the South are dumb. It's like, yeah, well,
they've got DuPont, in their
DuPont poured Teflon chemicals into the water. What I'm saying? Right. What did you think was going to happen? In the hookworm epidemic, they eat your brain, you know? I think it was FDR. Or no, it was Vanderbilt. It was actually private, helped cure hookworm.
I love how
we're
not saying they're not dumb. We're just saying why.
No, I think, dude, Southern wisdom is something that is very much missing in society today. It's common sense. It's like when I see someone cut a cake with a knife, I'm like, what are you doing? You use dental floss, you idiot. Like, I go around to my friends in L.A.'s home, their butter's in the fridge.
Yeah, that's a European thing to put the butter on.
No, that's a Southern thing, too.
Yeah.
Okay? Why would you put butter in the fridge? You cut it and the bread's all fucked. You have to wait for it. Like, what are you doing? Yeah. Like, there's just certain shit in the South that's a different. There's always a cup of grease on the.
Yeah.
Like, there's just.
Yeah.
Like, being around L.A., I feel like. People are like, oh my God, Whitney, you know so much. I'm like, no, I'm just not an LA idiot. There's really basic. If there's a rattlesnake, people call animal control. Like, how do you not know how to kill a rattlesnake? How do you not know how to take a
tick? How do you kill a rattlesnake?
With a shovel. You chop its head off.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So just a blunt object. Have a flamethrower now, so I'll probably be
just
using that.
Just a blunt object.
Yeah, you have to cut its head off. There's no.
You just have to go for the head.
You can't. By the time you call animal control and they come, it's going to be dark. It's going to have killed someone's dog. You got to, you got
to
kill them.
Okay. I didn't know how to kill a
rattlesnake, shovel, kill him. Or like a machete knife thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ticks. I know people go to the Hamptons, these Hollywood idiots that are like, I got Lyme disease because I had a tick on for 4 days. I'm like, why didn't you pull it off? They're like, we didn't know how to get it out. Like,
I thought you put Vaseline, but you don't.
You pull it out right away make sure the head, bite the head off and burn it. If you had a tick on your body, you would put Vaseline on it?
No, you're not supposed to do that.
No, for sure.
I was with friends and their brother, and I was like, you know how you hear half it? I was like, put Vaseline on it. So they did, and then when we got Wi-Fi, we're like, oh, don't do that.
Yeah, no. I just, there's certain backwood street smart shit that is just like lacking here in a very big way.
Check your Uber license before you get in the car.
I don't even do Uber. We're just giving strangers our home address all the time.
I know. That's you shouldn't do Uber.
What I started doing is I started going, oh, I'll just have them drop me off at a different house and pretend it's my house. And it's like, well, then that person's going to get murdered. That's so shitty.
All your neighbors are dead. You're like, I'm fine. No one's come after me.
It's just such a... I was like, oh, no, I'll just get out. I will pretend to go in someone else's house. And I'm like, this is so fucked up. But then also there's like, so one time I like had them drop me off at this like apartment complex, like kind of near. And then I was like, well, I don't even think I live in an apartment. Like they're just like the shit that comes up. And you're like, why am I trying to impress my murderer? Yeah. Like, I do Uber if I have to, but I do like having conversations with people. Like when I go to New York
that's
now,
the worst. I would never.
I love talking to Uber drivers. What do you mean? They'll explain everything that's going on in Russia.
In
dude,
LA, they're like. Dude,
if it wasn't for Uber drivers, I would not be in the know about the fact that in Russia, there's at least 2 people that have gotten plastic surgery to look like Vladimir Putin.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Fascinating!
A lot of the LA Uber drivers are also actors, so I'm like, but...
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Cab drivers, I think, are...
Love cab drivers. In New York, when I get land always, and I'm just like, tell me everything. Talk to me.
I've been having a lot of Uber drivers that are like white guys. And because I've been working in true crime, I just always assume that they're like a murderer. So I talk to them and we have these like really nice conversations because I'm like de-escalating, you know. Even
but
though
you
they
can't murder
it.
Now in Ubers because it's like you wouldn't get away with that anymore. Yeah. You know, this is good news. You're going to get murdered by your husband, Jenna. Stop worrying about all these strangers. Most women are murdered by their husbands, okay? Just don't go on any boats.
I know.
No paddleboarding for you. All right, I love you. I have to finish editing something. I love you, love you, love you more than anything.
Thank you so much for having me. This was really nice. I'm sorry I'm very tired.
No, don't. It is what it is always. And I think that, honestly, I'm at the point where I think it's way more interesting for people to hear comedians like this. Like
not be funny.
Yeah, but kind of. Like kind of. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. Or just be who we are. People like it. It's like the hang. When I listen to a podcast and people are like, blah, blah, I'm like, Jesus Christ. Like, most people listen to podcasts when they're doing a couple other things and they kind of just want to hear adults have a conversation.
Yeah.
Not funny. It's out. Also, Lady Killer, her special on Peacock is absolutely genius. Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. Aww. Get in the wormhole. Watch Indefensible. If you're a legal nut, you will love it. I've sent it. I send that show to so many people. When people say, like, what should I watch? I always send them Indefensible.
Thanks.
Big hit. Big hit. And I have lawyers in my family and they love it.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. They love it. I love you, Jenna. Jenna Friedman, not funny. Don't ride elephants. Bye.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.